Right, and now I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Shauna S. from San Diego.
Hey everyone, I'm Shauna and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, it's good to be here today. It's good to be sober. It's always an honor to be asked to speak, to be of service. Service work today brings me so much more joy than anything else in the world. All the material things, all of that stuff, service work fills you like nothing else. And it used to not be like that. My life was consumed with myself. From the second I would wake up in the morning, all I cared about is what is Shauna going to do today? And what am I going to get out of the world today? I was actually born and raised in San Diego. My sobriety day is May 27, 2010. I got sober when I was 23, after like 5 relapses. And I lived out in Rancho Bernardo. My parents barely had any money growing up. They lived paycheck to paycheck, and they would bend over backwards to provide for us. I have an older brother. He's 2 years older than me. They set really high standards for our lives. I'm Persian, you know, and so, like, our standards are, like, up here, and, like, you can't fall short at all. And so from a really young age, you know, my brother was expected to be a doctor, and I was expected to be a doctor or a lawyer or a pharmacist or something along those lines. 30 years later, my brother is a surgeon, and God had different plans for my life. I'm definitely not a doctor. I'm nowhere near that. I, like, totally failed out of that. But from a really young age, it felt like it was my mom, my dad, and my brother. My brother was perfect, you know? He was great at every subject. He was great at every sport. And, like, I'm not trying to compete with that, you know? And from a really young age, I just went totally down the left path. And everyone else stayed on the right path. And from as young as I can remember, I stole from stores. Everything that I wanted, I stole. My dad would ask me to go pour alcohol for him, and I would put extra ice so that there would be a little bit of alcohol left over for me. And he would always drink Heinekens, and I would always drink the neck of the Heineken. There's pictures of me drunk when I was young. You know, my friends, like, they didn't go to the store and steal, and I just didn't know it was a problem. You know, I stole everything. Like, I almost didn't even know that I couldn't buy cigarettes at under 18. And so I stole the cigarettes from my aunt. And going into school, everything was, you know, I was a bad student. I would get D's and C's on all of my report cards. And so then the teacher was like, Shauna, you need to go get your report card signed. You're, like, failing our class. And I'm like, oh, this sucks. So I would lie to my mom about how my grade was actually not a D, but she just still needs to sign the report card. And I learned quickly, when I mess up, there's consequences, and my mom has to sign my report card. So starting next year, I signed all of my documents that were required to be signed by your parents so that all of the signatures would match, right? I convinced my mom to buy me my own phone line so that on all those documents, I would put my personal phone line so that when the teachers called the house to talk to my parents about why I was doing bad in school, that they would call me and I would let them know that my parents aren't home. And this is just how I lived. I ripped off all of my neighbors. I was an entrepreneur from a young age. I went to all of my neighbors and I sold them raffle tickets to win a prize so that I could get money, so that I could buy candy. This is all before the age of 11, by the way. I crashed my mom's car into my neighbor's house. And, you know, it was just like a rough childhood. Like, I don't know, my poor parents, you know. they set all these high standards. I couldn't live up to them. But when I turned 11, my parents decided to move. And so then I got the opportunity to be the woman that I always wanted to be, you know, like this perfect, popular, pretty, like all of these great things. And so we moved to the UTC area, and I was doing really good. You know, I feel like the school district was a lot easier, so I got straight A's and everything. We were on the right track until I got into high school. I did pretty well in high school until the last year, where I was like super excited to go to college so I could be free from my family. So I started sneaking out every weekend. And the craziest shit would happen. Like, I'd get a flat tire at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know? And, like, my mom goes to work at 5 in the morning. And I'm, like, tripping in the middle of the night about who's going to change my flat tire because I got to get home before my mom comes home or leaves for work. And so this was just kind of my life. I left for college. I went to Riverside. Obviously, I didn't get into any of the schools that my parents wanted me to get into. My brother got into UCSD. He went into UCSD Medical School. He's just been, like, on track for everything. In every area of my life, I've been off track. You know, I just couldn't seem to make the grades, to get into the school, to, like, do well in life. So I finally get into college, and it's really awkward in college, and so, like, all I really knew how to do was drink. Just kind of makes me feel more comfortable, and I can be social, and, like, really, I don't even care about anyone else when I'm able to drink. And so in college, I would make my own mixed drinks. I became my own bartender, and I made these incredible drinks. And so then all of the people that were around me, I would force them to drink, and we'd all get annihilated, like, every night. My dad's super pissed because now I'm doing bad in school, and I'm definitely not going to be a pharmacist at this point. And so, you know, I tell them that I'm, like, failing school. And by my third year, I dropped down to one class. But I still have this, like, ingrained lifestyle that I'm supposed to live, you know? Like, my parents set these really high standards for my life, and I'm supposed to, like, be an overachiever. And so what I decided to do was max out all of my student loans when I had one class and invest my money in drugs. And I was going to be, like, the best drug dealer out there. You know, I felt like the return on investment was really big. It was great. So now me and my boyfriend were selling drugs. We're making a boatload of money to start. And now I'm in school on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I lived in Riverside. I would commute from San Diego to Riverside on Tuesday mornings and come home on Thursday nights. And I just lived the life that I always wanted to live. And I'm drinking. I'm getting high every night. At this point, you know, I thought money controlled everything. I thought that happiness was having money and having the job and having the car and having all of these things on the outside that I just assumed all this stuff is going to make you happy. And so I'm chasing them and I'm chasing them and, you know, I'm starting to, like, lose money. I can, like, barely stay alive. I'm stealing from the grocery stores all of the food that I have to eat. Any money that I had in my purse was to buy alcohol or get drugs. I didn't buy anything for myself at that point. Everything was stolen, even my food. And life just continued to get worse. And there were so many warning signs. And I tried to pull so many people into my shitty boat, you know? Like, anyone that I could grab onto in life to pull them into my shitty boat, like, that's what I was, you know, aiming to do. I didn't have any real friends. At this point, I didn't need to talk to my family because they no longer are providing me with any finances, so I don't even care to talk to them anymore. I don't care about having any relationships with anyone. I'm just here to get money, get alcohol, get drugs, and, like, let's move forward. And after a certain amount of years of doing that, like, you just don't really know how to live anymore. You know, you don't know what a job is anymore. You don't know how to deal with life on life's terms. Everything's a blur. And I loved your share about blacking out. There's so many times I would be blacked out on the bathroom floor, like I couldn't even pick myself up. And I would hear my phone ring twice, and I knew that when my phone rang twice, it was my boyfriend calling, and I knew he was going to be super pissed. And people would just have to come literally dead weight Shayna on the floor, pick me up, and try to put me into the car to take me home, where I would then be puking all night. And I just got accustomed to living like that. Like, honestly, I just didn't really know any other way of living. I was totally a loser. I didn't have a job. I didn't have any real friends in my life. So I tried to get sober. Well, actually, I just tried to stop doing drugs. And, you know, when I stopped trying to do drugs, the alcohol just really kicked in like tenfold. And so I had to get blacked out every single night to go to sleep. Like, I wouldn't even go home without going to the liquor store to get alcohol so that I could just even sleep at night. I started taking pills that I didn't even know what they were. And at this point, I like thought I was sober because I wasn't on like hardcore drugs. Everything just started getting really bad and really dark. I checked into the methadone clinic 3 times. The therapist there like, hey, Shayna, this is a revolving door. Don't you get it? And I didn't get it. You know, I had conversations with people for like 3 hours who were concerned about me, the frothy emotional appeal. Like, I remember vividly sitting at a Starbucks talking to someone about how I can drink normally. Like, I'm only going to drink on the weekends. I'm not going to, like, take it to the limit. Obviously, I see what happened to my life. Like, I'm not going to go back down that path. Like, I'm going to get back on the right path. I'm going to live my right life. And 3 hours of, I truly believed in my heart that, like, I could actually do that. And I tried 5 times. I tried everything. I tried only drinking. I tried only taking pills. My best idea to kick heroin was to smoke meth. And like all of these ideas, I was willing to go to any lengths to get sober and to get off of all this stuff. Like whatever it took, I was willing to do it. So I'm back in the methadone clinic for the 3rd time. All this crazy shit's happening to me now. I got pulled over into secondary, coming across the border with drugs in my bag. And everything about me was a liar, a stealer, and a cheat. You know, I was like so confident in all of that stuff. And so we get pulled over into secondary. I see all the dogs. I'm like totally tripping. But like everything in me is like, Shayna, you have to get yourself out of this situation. And so I'm willing to go to any lengths to get myself out of this situation. So I talk my way out of this situation, get through secondary, continue on to San Diego, go get more alcohol, go get more drugs, and it's like bad timing. You know, it was just like wrong place, wrong time. Like all of these warnings in my life, bad place, wrong time, you know. Everyone hates me. Universe sucks. Everyone's out to get me. And so I check into the methadone clinic for the 3rd time. I'm finally able to stay sober. I'm on the methadone. And I go up to Chico, and I had no idea detoxing from that, like what it was going to entail. I thought I was like 3 months sober at this point. So I go through the full methadone detox, and it was really gnarly. But for the first time in my life, I felt pain. For the first time in like 10 years, I felt like an emotion, and it felt really good. Like I felt cramps in my legs for the first time, and my back hurt, and I actually had emotions. And, you know, I think that the hardest part about recovery is, it's like looking back on it, the easy part was getting off of everything. The hard part is actually trying to live our life sober, you know, because life happens and life is really hard and we lose jobs and we lose relationships. But I was just I was so grateful to be sober. I was literally willing to go to any lengths. And if you asked me to scrub your floors, I would scrub your floors. And if I had to wash your car to stay sober, I would wash your car. I mean, like, whatever it took, I was willing to do. If you told me to read the book, I'd read the book. And then something happened. I was 45 days sober, and sure enough, like a good alcoholic, I get into a relationship. And you wouldn't believe this, but the person that you attract in early recovery is just a reflection of how you feel inside, right? So I feel like the biggest piece of shit, like the biggest loser in San Diego. Nobody wants to date me. I don't have any friends. I literally have nothing. I just really want to be sober. And so this guy comes along, you know, and he has a car, and that's like a big deal in early recovery to have a car, you know? If you find a guy who has a car, you're like, oh my God, Mom, come meet my boyfriend. And so I'm over here like worshiping the ground that he lives on. And guess what? I had a sponsor, but like, you don't really need your sponsor when you have a relationship, you know, because they're like filling everything that you need. So there was like nothing to work on in my step work. So I attract this like total, I mean, you can only imagine, guy who still lives at his mom's house. And, you know, I'm the fixer type. Like, I'm going to help you get your life together. And so, like, I'm going to help you get a job. I'm going to help you go back to school. And, like, we're going to do this. And we're going to live together. And I come up on a year sober. And I don't know if I should relapse the day before my 1 year sobriety or the day after. Like, I hate my life. And this guy won't leave, you know? And, like, I can't get out of the relationship. And honestly, like, I don't even know how to stay sober without this guy. Because at 6 months sober, like, I almost went out. And he was like, Shayna, if you go out, our relationship's over, you know? And I was like, move. Like, I'm going. Like, get out of the way, you know? Anyways, and he helped me through all of that stuff. But I was so miserable. I didn't know how to get out of the relationship. My ass was falling off. And by this point, I was 14 months sober. And my best idea is I'm just going to go use, you know? And I just didn't know any other way to get out of it. I couldn't deal with emotional pain. Emotional pain in recovery is so hard to deal with, you know? Because you can't just pray that shit away. It's there. And you have to, like, sit through it. And so all of that happened, and literally by the grace of God, we broke up, and right when that happened, women in AA came and literally saved my life. They came to my house every day, and they picked me up, and they took me to a meeting, and these were my first real friends that I had. They took me to a meeting. I had fun in recovery. We went to dinners. There was like 20 people at all of these dinners. Like, we just started to have fun and like live this great life. And I loved it. And I was starting to become happy for the first time. And so at 2 years sober, I found a sponsor who is still my sponsor today. And I did a workshop, a step workshop, and she took me through the steps. And it completely changed everything. The steps took me 6 months, so by 2.5 years, my entire life changed. Everything was taken from underneath me. My job that I had was taken from me. My living situation that I had was taken from me. I had to move into my best friend's mom's house at 2.5 years sober. And I didn't understand why all this stuff's happening to me. You know, I don't understand, like, why all this bad stuff's happened to me. I'm just trying to, like, do good. You know, aren't you supposed to have a good life in recovery at 2 years sober? And none of that was happening for me. You know, I was starting to lose a lot of stuff. And, you know, I hope that if you get one thing out of this talk, that The only person that was able to change my entire life and bless me with everything that I have today, and the reason why I even get to stand here today, is because of God. I had no idea what God had in store for me. I had no idea that God was taking away the job that I had to bless me with the most incredible career that I could have ever dreamed of. I had no idea that God was taking away my living situation so that he could bless me with the most incredible apartment that I could have ever dreamed of that had so much peace there. I had no idea that all of the relationships that he took away from me is because he was preparing me to be with my husband. And I didn't meet my husband until I think I was like 4 or 5 years sober. And so, like, imagine how many shitty relationships I was in for 4 or 5 years. I mean, my picker did not get any better. Like, none. I don't know what happened. It was literally a miracle that I get to be married today. All I did was God told me to get out of these relationships. And I listened because me and God were super tight. And so I listened, and literally 3 months later, he blesses me with my husband. I couldn't even believe it. And, you know, all of this stuff happened as a result of the steps. And, you know, step one in the big book goes all the way up to page 52. 52. The steps are only 104 pages. And step one goes all the way up to page 52. Half of our step work is step one. That's how important step one is. And it talks about this physical craving, about how every time I put drugs or alcohol into my body, I want more. I have this phenomenon of craving. I can't explain it to you. I don't see it. It just happens to me. And guess what? This never happens in the average temperate drinker, right? This craving that I get, it only happens in someone who's an alcoholic. And I'm dealing with this mental obsession. Like, why is it that so many people relapse in early recovery, right? Like, why do I have these crazy thoughts all the time? Why do I think that it's a good idea to go out at 30 days, at 60 days? How come everyone relapses at 9 months, 6 months, right? How come I'm a chronic relapser? How come I can't get long-term sobriety? And I have this mental obsession. The problem centers in my mind. That with nothing in my body, completely sober for 6 months, mine was what, 14 months, 12 months? My best idea was to go drink and use. That's the best idea I can come up with to deal with life. I'm failing out of school, I'm going to go drink and use. I can't get out of this relationship, I'm going to go drink and use. It's the only idea that my mind can come up with. And so many people, so many parents and families ask me, like, doesn't my daughter see all these consequences that are happening in her life? Like, why would you continue to go back? And it's like my body processes alcohol and drugs as if it's like food. It's like a survival mechanism for me, you know? And so, like, it ends up, of all of the survival mechanisms, drugs and alcohol have like somehow worked their way all the way to the top, and now I'm willing to go to any lengths to get that. And my mind's right there supporting me. Shayna, you can drink on the weekends. Shayna, heroin was your problem, not alcohol. You know, I'm 8 years sober, and guess what? The thought doesn't cross my mind to do heroin. No, it doesn't. Because the devil knows that to get me to go out, he has to tempt me with alcohol. The alcohol's easy, right? Just get her to drink. She doesn't remember what happened when she was drinking. I don't even remember the consequences of like 2 weeks ago, you know? Like, I just make the same mistakes over and over again. And so my mind tells me I'm going to go pick up the alcohol first. That's not a big deal. I was 6 months sober and on a family vacation, and my best thinking was like, Shayna, just go lick the bottle of alcohol and you'll taste it and you'll remember how much you hate the taste of alcohol and you'll never want to drink again. Just lick the bottle. Like, who do you think is supposed to stop me from these, like, I mean, this is just one of my brilliant ideas. I have, like, I mean, ask my sponsor, like, thousands of ideas for you. But, like, really, who is supposed to stop you from these, like, crazy thoughts that, you know, how did I stay sober through that? I thought that was a great idea. Taste it. You're not going to like it. This will be easy. And it's because of a miracle like God. And congratulations, Perry, on your 5 years. I loved what you had to say. 5 years is amazing. It's all because of God. There's something greater than me that's looking out for me. You know, like the devil is totally going to regret making me an alcoholic and a drug addict. Because, like, now I'm here to be of service to other people. But absolutely every day they're out there working to get me in my mind where the problem centers, regardless of all the consequences. Because guess what? The longer you have sober, they weren't that bad. You want to know what goes through my head today? Married. Oh, you know when you're married and you have kids, like who would actually want to go do drugs again? You know, like you're an adult. Like that's like something kids do. That's the kind of stuff that goes through my head. And I have to be like aware of that on a daily basis. And the third part, you know, the big book says we will straighten out physically and mentally, that I'm going to recover from this physical and the mental state of mind, but that I'm not cured of alcoholism because it's a daily spiritual thing, right? I'm not cured of a spiritual malady. It's like I have this big hole in my stomach or in my heart that I'm trying to fill, and I'm feeding it with sandwiches that I'm trying to tape onto the outside of my body, thinking that I'm going to get full on the inside. And now I'm wondering, how come my hole's not getting fed? I'm hungry. Nothing's going in. And so the third part of step one is the bedevilments, the spiritual malady. And I'm going to read this. And the other thing that I want to point out is with the bedevilments, what I love about the big book, if you're new and you haven't read it, you're going to love reading it. It's all about you. Like if you love hearing about yourself and thinking about yourself, like this book is all about you. I was reviewing it earlier today. I'm like, oh, it's such a good book. It's all me, the good old days, you know. But the bedevilments are amazing because like when you're new, you go through the steps, but what about when you are 4 years sober, 10 years sober? How do you even gauge your recovery? How do you know how well you're doing? How do you know when you actually have to go through the steps again? How come some people are getting some incredible promises and my promises suck? And so what I always do is I go back to these bedevilments and I take a look at them. Where am I in these? I was having trouble with personal relationships. Totally. Like, I didn't have any relationships drinking and using, but completely sober, absolutely I was having trouble with all of my relationships. I didn't know how to be a daughter. I didn't know how to be a sister. I didn't know how to be an employee. You know, all I knew how to do in my past jobs was steal money from my employers, right? I didn't know how to show up on time. I didn't know how to not lie. We couldn't control our emotional natures. That when you see me and you ask me how I'm doing, I tell you, oh, I'm doing great. Everything's good. Thanks. How are you? But really, I'm dying inside, and I have so much pain inside, and I have no control over that. If I could make my life better and if I could just be happy, I would do it. Do you think I want to be miserable? I was a prey to misery and depression. Like, I would literally wake up depressed. The day would be going just fine, and like a bird out of the sky, I would just be depressed for no reason. I couldn't make a living. So I could get a job. I could earn income. But today, do you have a job that you love, right? Are you able to make a living, create a life that you love living? I wake up every morning and I am so grateful for the career that God has blessed me with. I love going to work. I love what I do. I don't feel tired from it. Everyone asks me, Shayna, I don't know how you do your job. I'm like, you know, it's a calling. God called me to do what I do. I love what I do. I only have a couple bad days a year, you know, and it's just when I'm stressed out. But other than that, I wake up every morning and I love the life that I have. And who do you think gave me this life? God. God gave me this life. I couldn't create this life. I tried to create this life, right? But my life that I created on my best terms, I'm just going to drink because I don't know how to get out of this shit. Like, was always my solution. We had a feeling of uselessness. Of course, I couldn't be useful to other people. Like, if my problems are out of control, I can't help you. I don't want to help you, actually. Like, when my problems are way too much for me, I'm not going to answer the phone to see who needs help on the other line. No, I don't care. Because me first, right? That's when I'm in the bedevilments. I was full of fear. My entire life is consumed by fear. Every relationship that I got in was because I was afraid of being alone. I was afraid of going through the breakup, so I would stay in these horrible relationships. I would stay at these shitty jobs because I didn't feel worthy, or I was afraid of like actually trying to like excel in life and shoot for the stars and be everything that I wanted to be. I was full of fear. It held on to everything. I was unhappy, and I couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That was my entire life. And if that's you today, if you experience any of these, it's time to go through the steps again. I go through the steps every like year and a half. I'm about to start them again on July 24th. And there's always room for growth. There's always room to go deeper. There's always more room to get more connected to God. You know, steps 2 and 3 are about having a relationship with your higher power. And if you struggle with that, I always talk to my sponsees about how, like, everything in the world, you know, the world is like, what, 75% water? And we consume 25%, yet all of the animals and all of the trees and the water and everything is perfectly taken care of in our world. And guess what? Nobody asked Shana to go water that plant. Nobody asked Shana to go feed that animal. And everything is taken care of. And I try to start with that as a baseline. You know, I feel like having a relationship with your higher power is just having someone on your side. 'Cause like people, they come and go. My parents, they weren't there for me until like my life turned around, you know? Like they weren't trying to help me. They weren't there for me. They didn't send me to rehab. They didn't want to support me. But when my life's all great and dandy, my parents are like, hey, Shana, you want to come over? You want to hang out? Oh, you're doing so good. I'm going to brag about you to all my friends. But it's like, okay, and then what? I go through a hard time and then they leave again? And so, like, life is kind of like that. And, like, this is all real life stuff that happens. Like, people are going to come and go. Relationships are going to come and go. Jobs are going to come and go. You know, one of the big promises in here is we're going to be rocketed into the fourth dimension. That, guess what? I have good news for you. You guys can't touch any of me on the inside. If my happiness comes from my inside, if everything in my life is built from inside, you guys can't take it away from me. Because guess what? Life is going to take away your fancy car and the fancy house, all this stuff. It all comes and goes. You know, I lost my job at 2.5 years sober and my home, and I'm sure any relationships that I had. I had absolutely nothing. My life wasn't supposed to be like that, except that God was preparing me to hook me up. You know? And like for so long I was like, I had this bad outlook on life that bad things are happening to me. But in real life, and when you have a connection to God, He's really using situations in your life to help other people. Anytime some gnarly situation comes up in my life, and guess what? They absolutely happen. I'm going to be able to use that to be of service to someone else in the future. And any job that I lose, any relationship, all this stuff, like God has bigger and greater things for you. But we have to trust in Him. And you know, after step 3, like not everything is all better and perfect. Because we have all of this nonsense in step four that is blocking us. All of the wreckage from the past. Do you know how many people I couldn't talk to? How many stores I couldn't go into? How many... everyone that I ripped off. Like, God doesn't want me to live. I can't be of service if I can't access half of San Diego. And that's no way to live. And it takes courage to do it. So I power through my fourth step. So if you're sitting on your fourth step, you know, that's definitely no good place to be. But just sit down, take time, power through it. You'll get through it. And there are so many amazing blessings on the other side. And in 5 and 6 and 7, we talk about our character defects. Like, we have so many character defects. First and foremost, I'm an alcoholic. I'm selfish. I'm dishonest. I lie. I steal. I cheat. There's so many defects of character that I have. And, like, I can't work on that. I remember one time one of my very first sponsors tried to tell me, oh, pick a list of 5 of your character defects and start working on them during the week. I can't work on it. I literally, as much as I, like, don't want to lie to you, I lie to you. And as much as I don't want to steal, I steal. I can't work on that stuff. I can't work on not being an alcoholic. And so I need to have access to a power greater than myself to do all of that. And, like, my life changes from all of that because all of the work happens from the inside. And so God has worked on changing my heart, which in turn changes my thoughts, right? And then it changes my words, and then it changes my actions. And so then coming from your heart, like, I get to love people unconditionally. So many people around me fuck up all the time, you know? And, like, I get to have compassion on them, you know? And I get to, like, love them, and I get to show up for them, and I also get to understand, because guess what? I did that so many times. I could not stay sober no matter what. And then I made all of my amends. First and foremost was the methadone clinic. I owed them a lot of money. I made a lot of amends, and, you know, I had to. This is life or death for me, and there's no other way around it. If my sponsor told me I have to go make amends to stay sober, I'm going to go make amends to stay sober. I remember in my relationship before my marriage, I had a gnarly breakup, you know, and I'm, like, totally cussing him out and the whole thing, knowing that I have to make amends. And my sponsor, 6 months later, she's like, hey, have you made your amends to him yet? And I was like, no. And she's like, okay, well, when you're ready to be in a relationship and for God to bless you with a great relationship, that'll happen after you make your amends. Oh, so I got on the phone, like, that day. And I made all the phone calls, and I made my amends. You know, if you're struggling in your financials, do you have financial amends you need to make? If you're struggling in your relationships, do you have relationship amends that you need to make? And today, what my life looks like, I live in 10 and 11 and 12. And I continue to do my steps over again. Step 10 is more of like a daily living, right? How do I live during the day? Am I in constant fear and worry? Am I dishonest during the day? Am I selfish? I have to take a look at what I'm doing during the day. What my life looks like today is I wake up every morning and I go downstairs at 7 a.m. till 7:30 and I do my prayer and meditation. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's happening out there. A lot of life, a lot of good stuff, a lot of bad stuff. I don't know what's coming at me. I don't know who's going to be out there. And I have to be spiritually prepared to deal with all of this stuff. I can't do it on my own power. And so I wake up every morning, I get right with God, I get centered before I go out there into the world. And when I'm out in the world, I need to constantly be thinking of other people. Because there's only 2 options to live. You're either going to be thinking about yourself and your problems, which are never ending, let me tell you. Or you're going to be thinking about someone else and their problems and how to help. And guess what? The second option is really, really fulfilling. It brings you so much joy, so much value in your life. Otherwise, it's easy for me to wake up and worry about my problems. It's easy to be consumed in everything that I have to do. There was a point where I was living in self so much that nothing even happened in my life, nothing at all. And 1 month, I felt completely broke financially, completely depleted internally, and nothing changed. Nothing. No change in pay, nothing. Like, how does that even happen? How come one day I feel so fulfilled with something and the next day, like, everything could change? And so all of it is living on a spiritual basis. Like, I have to maintain that contact. There is no other way for me. And step 11 is coming home at night, reviewing my day, and being the best woman that I can be. You know, every day I just want to be a better woman that I am today. I get to learn how to be a wife. I get to learn how to be an employee. I get to learn how to work with other people, how to have compassion, how to be a good sister. My brother called me for the first time a couple weeks ago. He's 33. He's not an alcoholic. He actually doesn't understand any of this stuff. A lot of doctors don't. They just don't really get any training in it, you know? They literally think I can just stop. And he calls me and he's like, man, you know, I'm really struggling. And like, I called our parents and no one's there to support me. And I was thinking, man, you know how many years it's been since no one supported me? Like, I could count how many times my parents haven't been there for me and how many times you haven't been there for me. I was just thinking all of this stuff. But I told him, like, look, this is life. Like, people aren't there to support you all the time, you know? People aren't really here to, like, be bothered with your problems. And, like, it hurts me to hear him saying all of that because really it's just the spirituality of it, you know, all he needs is like access to God. And it's so hard because in that arena, you know, when you're doing heart surgery, like you kind of are God in the second, you know what, like you're saving this person's life. And so he really struggles with that. And I just feel so grateful to have the opportunity to have these tools. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic today. I get a different way of living. I actually get to help people. I know how to get out of myself. When I'm struggling in life, it's like I just go back to my basics. I go to my home group. I go to church on Sunday. I call my sponsor. I go out to dinner with some friends. And, like, everything can be all better really quickly. But, like, I have to be in tune to life. I have to be alive in life. And that's what steps 10 and 11 allow us to access. Otherwise, I don't know what's going on in life, you know? Like, all of this stuff is going by, and I have no idea what's going on. And so if you're new here, I hope that you find a sponsor, work the steps, and get access to a higher power. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of my affairs. All of my affairs. This book gives us a way to live, and it solves all of my problems. All of them. Not in it, and it's funny in that line, it doesn't say we're solving your alcohol problems. It says we're solving all of your problems, even the alcohol one, which is so crazy because I came here for the alcohol. I didn't come here for my other problems. And so if you're struggling in any area of your life, there is a solution. If you want to have more promises, if you want to go deeper in your relationship, if you don't have access to the amazing blessings that so many other people have, find an incredible sponsor. Go through the steps. Have a spiritual experience. Be of service to other people. And as long as you're taking care of other people, God will take care of all of your needs, you know, because he can use you. He can count on you, you know. And so I hope that you do that, and I hope that you are blessed. Thank you. Mm-hmm.